Ladies and gentlemen, good day. Welcome to the Neuland Laboratories Limited Q3 and 9-month FY24 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then 0 on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Ravi Udeshi from Ernst & Young. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Muskan. Good evening, friends. We welcome you to the Q3 and 9 months FY24 earnings conference call of Neuland Laboratories Limited. To take us through the results and to answer your questions, we have with us the top management from Neuland Laboratories, represented by Mr. Suchet Davuluri, Vice Chairman and CEO, Mr. Sahaj Davuluri, Vice Chairman and Managing Director, Mr. Abhijit Majumdar, CFO, and Mr. Sajeev Emmanuel Medikonda, Head Corporate Planning and Strategy. We will start the call with a brief overview of the financials by Mr. Abhijit Majumdar, and then Sahaj will give you broad highlights of the business trends and what he is observing in the market, and post that, we will open up this call for the Q&A session. As usual, the standard safe harbor clause applies as we start the call. With that said, I now hand over the floor to Abhijit. Over to you, Abhijit.
And I thought approx is better because then...
Thank you very much, Ravi, and a very good evening and warm welcome to you all for joining our Q3 and 9 months FY24 earnings call. I'll briefly talk about the financials now. The total income for the quarter was 394.9 crores as against 270.2 crores in Q3, an increase of 46%. This was largely driven by growth from existing molecules, newly commercialized molecules, molecules close to commercialization, and a healthy business mix. Our EBITDA for the quarter stood at 122.7 crores. With a margin of 31.1%, an increase of 10.8% over Q3. The EBITDA margin has seen improvement primarily due to enhanced operating leverage and as well as increase in revenue from Unit 3. I'd like to state that the overall operating environment continues to be unpredictable. However, we have witnessed stability in terms of input prices, and we continue to be vigilant in controlling our operational cost, deriving operating leverage. This gives us the ability to grow with marginal cost addition. We remain unwavering in our commitment to operational efficiency and cost optimization initiatives for consistent development of our organization. As we have consistently said in our previous earnings call, please measure our performance over a 3 to 4 year horizon, as our revenues and EBITDA margins will fluctuate on a quarter on quarter or even a year on year basis based on business mix, which is dependent on order inflow and project execution. Now coming to specifics, our gross margin was 59.8% in Q3 of FY24 versus 55.2% in Q3 FY23 and 59.8% in Q2 FY24. This gross margin includes manufacturing and other costs directly attributed to the product. The profit after tax was 80.7 crores as compared to 30.4 crores in Q3 FY23. This quarter's EPS stands at 62.9 rupees per share. We have been strategically optimizing operations and resource allocation to boost internal cash flows, thereby enhancing our business resilience in the face of potential fluctuations. We generated a free cash flow for the 9 months of 129 crores, and we used part of this cash surplus to reduce debt by 38.8 crores. Consequently, our debt position stands at a negative 44.6 crores. We also reduced our working capital cycle to 118 days at the end of December 24 as compared to 137 days. We saw slight lowering of cash accretion during the quarter under review. This was due to receivables arising from Christmas and year-end holidays in the developed markets. However, we have already seen it normalizing in the month of January. We continue to invest in upgrading our facilities and have invested 68.2 crores in capex during this year. I would like to add that we continue to be mindful of balancing growth with profitability by having continuous focus on cost control and efficient operations, and to be able to capitalize on opportunities which we believe will bring us greater scale over the long term. We will continue to be on the lookout for opportunities that will generate healthy and visible cash flows. With that, I would like to hand over the call to Saharsh for his remarks. Once again, and thank you.
Thank you, Abhijit. Good evening, everyone. We have now completed 9 months into FY24. The growth in performance that we have witnessed over the last few quarters reflects the transition of Neuland's business model from predominantly prime APIs to a healthy combination of CMS, GDS specialty, as well as GDS prime. This transition has also been driven by commercialization of molecules over the past 2 years and also ongoing improvements in R&D, project management, operations, and business development initiatives. In particular, the past 9 months have seen an increasing scale of the CMS business, as well as contribution from specialty products. On the CMS side, the growth of the business stems from both existing commercial products and projects under development, with significant revenue attributed to molecules near commercialization. We continue to see traction in the CMS business, led by increasing interest from customers with large pipelines. These interests further fortify Neuland's reputation as a well-regarded CDMO. We believe that the analytics we are sharing over a significant period of time provide you with a comprehensive understanding of the business's performance and trajectory. Therefore, in the interest of customer confidentiality, we will be unable to comment on any further questions on specific molecules. On the GDS side, we have seen growth both in specialty as well as prime segment in both Q3 as well as on the 9 month period. Paliperidone, Acetamide, Apixaban, and Dorzolamide have driven the 9 month growth. The prime segment growth is driven by Mirtazapine and Escitalopram. On a side note, I'm also happy to share that Neuland has achieved an S&P ESG rating of 64. Besides the highlights of this quarter, Suchet and I thought it may be helpful to share a broader management perspective on the business and how we see this business scaling up going forward. As you can surmise from the performance of the last few quarters, the business has delivered on both growth and profitability. The growth in revenues supported by product launches on the GDS as well as CMS side and a healthy mix of products consistent with the long-term strategy of the company. Improved operating leverage, particularly around large assets like Unit 3 that drove EBITDA margins. Again, for those of you who have followed our journey for some time, you may recall that we operated Unit 3 on very low utilization for a 4-year period before it could start delivering growth. Maybe now I'll request Suchet to add a few more comments before we open it up to Q&A.
Thanks, Ash. Hi, everyone. If you were to go back 5 years and look into the future, we believe that the business has transpired largely as expected. We definitely could have done things better, but we believe that the overall hypothesis of the Neuland business model remains firm and validated. Now, as we look into our future from where we stand today, we have much better visibility of our business. We expect it to grow at around approximately 20% annually over the next 4 to 5 years. As the quality and size of our business grows, we're getting a better visibility of our future. We will continue to commercialize molecules over the next 1 to 3 year time frame. We continue to create capacity, keep ramping up specific molecule with specific molecules in mind. As it stands today, FY 2025 looks like it will be a year of modest growth with some normalization of margins as operating expenses rise due to inflation and ongoing investments. Beyond FY 2025, which is FY 2026, 2027, and so on, we see a quicker growth on the back of both existing molecules and new ones yet to be commercialized from the capacity that we'll be creating in FY 2025. Do keep in mind that this is the current management outlook into the next 3 years. Factors such as individual product performance, Forex, raw material costs, geopolitical changes, changes in regulation will impact this outlook, as could other factors that are an integral part of us doing business. The bottom line is that we will continue to pursue growth and profitability in alignment with our strategic priorities and believe that the future is exciting. However, it will also bring its own set of challenges that I feel we are much better as an organization to deal with. Ravi, back to you to open the floor.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking the question. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll wait for the moment while the question queue assembles. The next question is from the line of Rahul Bharadwaj, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hi, congratulations on the numbers, and thanks for the opportunity. Thanks for sharing the guidance. As I understand correctly, you mentioned for the next fiscal year, we would expect nominal growth, and then for the financial year 2026, we can kind of expect a healthy growth rate with new molecules coming with commercialization. So, and then you also mentioned, like, for the next  4 to 5 years, we can expect the business to grow 20% annually. So, are you suggesting more on the lines that the growth would be, you know, north of 30%-40% in the financial year 2026 versus the current fiscal year and the next fiscal year? Would that be a correct understanding and interpretation?
To quantify. Yeah, thanks for the question. I think your audio was not very clear, but I think we understood the question clearly. Rahul, I think the way we had given our outlook, which is not really a guidance because it's not quantified, was more to convey two things. One is, as a company, as we have been doing well, we are getting better visibility into our future. That's one thing. Second, based on that visibility, we also thought it's important to just kind of articulate qualitatively how we see the future. And therefore, we had said that, you know, FY 2025 will be a kind of a moderate growth, and the growth beyond that will be higher. But I think we would probably limit our outlook to what we have said and not be in a position to quantify it based on the question that you've asked.
Yes, and I would reiterate that what we've provided is not a guidance, but the way we see the business as it stands today. Of course, as we gain a clearer understanding and as things develop, we will come and we'll be sharing those during these calls in the future as well. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Narayan Singh from Nuvama Securities. Please go ahead.
Hello, can you hear me? Hello?
Yes.
Sorry.
Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. So congratulations on good set of results, sir. I just have one question. I don't know if I may. So there was some news flow around about this KarXT and Karuna Therapeutics takeover by Bristol Myers and so on. Around this, I believe we are working, we are partners for this. The question is this molecule considered as near commercialization molecule, or it's already under commercialization molecule, sir? Just for my understanding, to understand.
Hello?
Naren, thanks for the question. I think as we had indicated several times, we will not be able to comment on any specific CMS molecules. I think whatever information we have been in a position to disclose is already there in the public domain. And therefore, I think a lot of this information that you're asking is available, but we will not be able to comment on it. Maybe what I can also just kind of help you understand is generally, and this is not the first time, that our customers, which are typically biotech companies, have been acquired by larger companies, big pharma or other large companies. And typically for us as a CDMO, it's always a positive development because it actually opens up new opportunities to expand the business with a newer company. But what I'm saying is a general comment. It is not connected with the question that you asked, but hopefully it will be helpful for you. But I will not be able to comment on the specifics. Thank you.
Thanks for the clarification, sir. Yeah, that was also my... I understand that you know don't want to disclose and more give more information, but it answered my one more follow-up question about what happens if the biotech companies are taken over by big pharma, which means so it's we are hoping that the company will really benefit from these kind of acquisitions. Thank you, sir. And all the best for the future.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sejal Kapoor, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for repeating the business unpredictability, uncertainty and lumpiness warning again and again over past several earnings calls. And that's extremely ethical and appreciated. Thank you for that. Please allow me to ask both questions one by one. Innovators giving their novel assets to a CDMO is comparable to, parents sending their young kids to a far away boarding school, where the parents will never be able to keep close day-to-day vigilance. So reputation, trust, integrity, and the capability to develop that young asset are some of the very important factors in their decision making. So in this context, the protection of intellectual property from external fraud like cybercrime, as well as any sabotage attempts internal to the organization are extremely important. So what steps is Neuland taking to ensure complete IP protection so that we continue to remain, quote unquote, the boarding school for the novel assets? And I've got a second question.
So, Sajal, I think thanks for the comparison. I mean, I won't go to the extent of saying that it's a parent sending their kid to the boarding school. But I think I take the spirit of your comparison that it is a very important decision for a company to outsource its molecule. What we've seen, Sajal, based on interactions with customers as well, is that to a large extent, they're very objective about these decisions. And they're objective because they take into consideration what are the options, what is the cost, what could be the risk associated with the outsourcing option, what are the timelines of their project, what is the technology that they require. Usually these are the top four or five reasons why they would outsource a molecule, assuming that they don't have that in-house capability or they don't tend to invest any more in their own in-house capability. Having said that, I think it becomes a very clear decision for them. And that is the view that we've taken when it comes to building our own internal capabilities. Having said that, the point you raised about intellectual property is absolutely right. In fact, we saw this coming, I think, more than 10, 15 years ago. So, in fact, we were one of the first companies in India to also get certified by ISO 27000 for information management and protection. And that certification, we get re-audited and we get recertified once every couple of years. So that certification gives one level of confidence to our customers that their information is safe with us. Second is that currently, since we don't do any molecules of our own, or neither do we manage any or manufacture any finished dosage, and therefore we are not at any type of a conflict with our customers, that gives them an additional layer of comfort that, you know, they can be rest assured that our priorities as an organization are aligned with that of the customers. So, and that continues to build.
And maybe, Sajal, I'll add one more comment to what Suchet has said. I think the fact that, you know, these molecules that we make for these innovators are increasingly complex in nature. So you might always almost, you know, look at the analogy of biologics. You know, a biologic is, you know, made in a particular facility, and, you know, as per regulatory guidelines, if it's made in another facility, it is actually defined as a different molecule altogether. Because as the molecules become more complex, I think what Suchet has said about, you know, protecting the IP, ensuring our business model does not conflict, is very vital. But third and also equally important is that there is so much complexity in the entire process and the specifications and the end deliverable to the customer that it is very difficult to actually, you know, quote unquote, steal something like this. And therefore, you know, clients do generally feel very comfortable working with Newland because we have all these three factors. If it was a very simple molecule, then yes, perhaps there might be, you know, some risk. But because we also deal with extremely complex molecules, that also creates an additional layer of security for us.
And today there's enough legal protection that's available in our country and otherwise for clients to make sure that their technology is protected. So I think we've come a long way, Sajal, from where we were about 10 or 15 years ago.
that's a very comprehensive response, and shareholders are reassured, so thank you for that. My second question is, novel CDMO, of course, is a sticky business. We know that. But the true test of stickiness is, you know, when the molecule changes hands. And with that, the relationship between the innovator and the CDMO partner also changes hands. So I know Saharsh touched upon this a little earlier on this call. But to explore further, because both scenarios have played out. I've seen a small biotech being taken over by Big Pharma, and the CDMO who was working on that molecule lost the right to commercially manufacture that. So take a hypothetical scenario of a Big Pharma gobbling up a small biotech that owns some high potential molecules, and there is a CDMO partner behind the development and the scale up of those assets. What typically happens to that CDMO partner when the ownership moves from small biotech to big pharma, who may be having a network of, you know, other and potentially larger CDMOs that the big pharma is already working with? And this happened with one of the Indian CDMO companies, not Newland, a different one, where a small biotech company that they were working with for an ovarian cancer drug got acquired by a big pharma, and then the CDMO company, the Indian CDMO, lost the contract to commercially manufacture. Is this, so which one is a more typical scenario when a small biotech is acquired by a big pharma? Do they retain the original CDMO, or is difficult to tell, or is it a function of molecule complexity, as Saharsh just mentioned? Thank you.
Think. It's a very good question, Sajal, and I think one thing is that there's no black or white response to this. I think it is subjective, but I think maybe in our experience, what we've seen is as you get closer to the NDA, and you know, if you have validated the process at your site and your site is registered in the NDA, that perhaps could be, you know, construed as, you know, really a binding kind of a relationship. And post an NDA, if a big pharma comes in and decides to change the CDMO, then perhaps there is, you know, maybe some strategic, you know, impetus behind it. But if the molecule is still earlier in the clinic, you know, it's going through phase one or phase two, then the risk of, you know, the incumbent CDMO losing out to the preferred partner of the big pharma is slightly more, because, you know, the sites have not been registered in the file yet and the process is perhaps still evolving. And therefore, you know, I think what we've seen is, you know, two or three key factors. One is where in the clinical path of development this drug is. That is one factor. Second is, you know, how complex is this process? If the process is complex enough that it will be a risk to shift the molecule to a preferred CDMO, then perhaps the big pharma would not still take that risk, because ultimately what big pharma is thinking about is, you know, is my supply chain going to be protected? And ultimately that is what determines. And I think, but we have to be very cautious, and we have to treat the transition of ownership with a lot of sensitivity. And of course, then the third part is, you know, I think contracts and things like that can also help make sure that, you know, you don't get kicked out unreasonably. But, you know, I think those are slightly more business tactics, so we won't dwell into those in detail.
No, I got the answer. Thank you so much. Thanks again.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Nirali Shah from Ashika Stockbroking. Please go ahead.
Hi. So my question is that currently we are experiencing a significant decline in the biotech funding. It's been a while that is from later half of 2023. So my question is that what challenges are we facing, and what is our strategy to mitigate this risk? And also, what is the timeline that we can expect or anticipate that this situation might be stabilizing in time sooner, or in this year or current year, current year 25?
Can you unmute?
Yeah, hi. Sorry, the mute button got stuck. So I think the biotech funding is still prevalent. I think that's what we hear. I think for us, maybe the simplistic way to look at it as a CDMO is that right now we are fortunate because the molecules which are driving the growth, especially in the CMS side, are all coming from companies which don't require funding. You know, these are cash-rich companies. But where perhaps we're seeing some challenges is the early stage pipeline, you know, drugs which are, you know, kind of either in preclinical or maybe in the early clinic. There is some challenges, I think, you know, even from the top of my head, I can recall two or three projects which have not moved forward in the last 6 months because the companies are still unable to raise funds. And what we hear from these companies is that it's a matter of 6 months. But obviously, we are not the experts to answer that question. But I think the important thing is that, you know, for a limited period, if this biotech funding crunch continues, I don't think there will be any challenges on our business performance or the outlook that Suchet and I had provided. Obviously, if this biotech crunch stays for a long time, then since Newland works predominantly with biotech companies, there could be an impact. But for now, we don't see a direct impact. And the last thing I can also say maybe is what we, if the indications are, you know, depending on the indications, the funding is also a challenge. So, for example, if you are in neuroscience and you're coming up with a path-breaking Alzheimer drug, the biotech cycle doesn't really impact the company's ability to raise funds. but if they're developing an ophthalmic indication for something which where there's already multiple drugs approved, then that company might struggle for, you know, maybe few more months to raise funds. So I think that's how we see the biotech funding situation.
Okay, so if everything goes well, can we expect Q2 of FY 2025, we can start seeing these issues to diminish?
No, as I said, the biotech funding is not really factoring into the outlook we have portrayed, because new projects as a percentage of the total business that we see in CMS is not very high. So therefore, it may not really have a significant impact. So therefore, we won't be able to answer that question.
Okay. Understood. Understood. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sanjaya from Umperson Group. Please go ahead.
So thanks a lot for the opportunity. So my question is that, what is the kind of utilization this Plant 3 now has? And I believe that you have taken land for subsequent factory expansion. Can you just give us some idea about your further expansion plan?
Yeah. So current utilization of Unit 3 is in the range of 57% odd, as we speak today.
Sorry, how much, sir?
57%.
Okay. But you still have gone ahead and bought more lands for expansion, right, sir?
Yeah. So the land that has been acquired, which we have communicated to the stock market, is an adjoining land to Unit 3. This is for future expansion.
Understood. And so the last question that I just wanted to get a sense from you, people are trying to ask from multiple angle, like biotech funding and so many, and you also give your this total active CMS projects and that you know, year-on-year basis, the total number probably is kind of looking like stagnating. And your overall revenue probably is kind of settled out at a certain level for last year or quarter. So is that something kind of a step jump kind of a pattern that you follow, or there is a seasonality? How do you really look at your coming year growth prospects, sir?
I think this question has been asked, answered clearly in the opening remarks, so I'm not sure what else we can add over here.
Okay.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Atirik Roy, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello. Can you hear me? Hello?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yes, we can.
Yeah. So, my name is Atirik Roy. I am an individual investor. Congrats on the good numbers. So my first question is, if I, as a pharma company, wants to change or add a supplier for my commercialized drug API under patent, what is the typical steps to be followed, and how much time does each step takes typically?
So you're saying if you are a pharma company who wants to change your supplier for a drug which is under patent, correct?
Commercialized drug API.
If
under patent.
Yeah, API, which is under patent.
Yeah.
Typically, if you were to do that, I think it's possible, and depending, the key is the complexity of the process, not just for the API, but for the finished dosage, and also the regulatory strategy, depending on how many countries that drug has been filed in. And depending on the situation, it could probably take a minimum, maybe 2 years. 2 years, and maybe it can take even 5 years. So it really depends.
Okay. And what if the drug API is in registration phase or is in clinical trial phase?
If it's in trial phase, there's not much.
Yeah, usually if it's in clinical trials or if the application has been made, companies prefer not to add any source or change any source until the commercial approval comes. However, if they have not filed for approval yet, it could add significant amount of time for the filing, because then from the new source they have to take it, they have to show that the finished dosage made from the new source is equivalent to the finished dosage that is already part of the clinical trials. So as Harsh was saying, so let me break this up. If it is a molecule which is already generic, right, it is not in the patent, then you could actually file an alternate source and get an approval within 1 to 2 years. However, if it is a molecule which is still in the clinic being tested on humans, then companies can easily add an additional source at that point, provided that it doesn't delay their filing timeline. But once they file, until they get the commercial approval, companies will not add an additional source unless there is a significant problem. Once it gets approved, then companies will add an additional source. But like I was saying earlier, that could take easily between 1 to 2 years based on the complexity of that molecule, and in some cases even go up to 5 years.
So in case of US, is there...
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, thank you everyone. Bye.
The next question is from the line of Anirudh Chetty from Solitary Advisors Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for the opportunity. Just wanted to check, is my voice audible here? Am I able to, are you able to hear me?
Yes, yes. Yes, we can hear you, Anirudh.
Okay. Thanks for the opportunity. Just one question, really. You'll have given an indication of, how y'all, see your revenues evolving over a 3 to 4 year time horizon. But, given our focus is really on more profitable growth, then, shouldn't we really be looking more at how profits can grow, over the next 3 to 4 years? And is my understanding right that the profit growth can actually be faster than revenue growth, as, the custom synthesis business, where we have a very strong pipeline and it's growing faster, can grow as a share of, our revenue, and this is higher margin. And, we could also see some operating leverage on our Unit 3, which is at 57% right now. So, how do you guys think about, if you all are able to grow at 20% revenue, how does one think about profit growth in such a scenario?
Thanks for the question, Anirudh. I think it's very important. I think if you look at how FY24 is faring, I think we've been kind of at 30% EBITDA margins right now, and the PBT levels are also quite strong, and the revenue growth also has been impressive. I think going forward, I think what's important is that the margins that we are seeing in FY24 in many ways are very optimal. The plant Unit 3 is being utilized very well. The product mix is excellent, and there has been no significant challenges on raw material prices. Forex is, reasonably favorable. So there are not too many, villains, so to speak, in FY24. And the EBITDA margins we see are, the 30% plus is kind of a reflection of that. I think going forward, we already spoke about the growth and how we see that panning out. We also want you to be mindful of the business mix that we are pursuing. I think our strategy is very clear. We want to drive business through GDS specialty and CMS. And I think that business mix will ensure that, our margins are going to remain healthy. But how exactly the profit margin as a percentage of sales is going to transpire is a question that is very difficult for us to answer. I think maybe somewhere FY24 is not really a baseline or a standard reference point, because as I had said, it's a very, very favorable number just given the circumstances. But at the same time, the EBITDA margins we've seen in the years before are perhaps a reflection of the business that was not yet matured. So I think it's hard for us to spell out more than this. I think you'll have to see how things unfold. But one more thing I would just like to add, you know, maybe a little bit on a cautionary note. You see, I think the business mix, you know, CMS and GDS, I think we should also be mindful that we each product has a different profit margin. They might be a CMS product which has a gross margin of maybe even less than 50%. But it might be very healthy contributor at an EBITDA level. It might contribute 30% or a 25% EBITDA to the business. So what our future will be at a gross margin level or at an EBITDA or a profit margin level will be also depending on how these molecules fare. And today, I think our GDS specialty business and CMS business are almost having similar kind of margins. So I think our strategy will be to pursue growth through these businesses, continue to nurture the prime business, and the growth is what we've already indicated. And I think the margins will be a reflection of that, but we won't be able to guide how that will exactly transpire. So I hope, I know it's a kind of a roundabout answer, but I hope that's helpful.
No, very, very helpful. But just wanted to clarify, you know, your point on the margins in specialty and CMS being similar, I presume at an EBITDA level you meant. But what would suggest, what would explain why it's a similar margin? Because it seems a bit counterintuitive. And I thought that the CMS is a more profitable segment for us because, you know, it's a patented product and the customer wants, you know, more supply chain security, trust in IT, and they're willing to give a little better pricing. Is also, you know, more available in that segment.
Yeah, no, I think the world of CMS molecules, if you take the entire universe, maybe the margins there are higher. But I think the molecules we see in our pipeline, we see molecules where, you know, the gross margin is maybe, like I said, under 50% also for some CMS molecules, but they're equally attractive because, as I said, at an EBITDA level, they're still very profitable. It's extremely sticky business. It's governed by contracts. There's an innovator with a patent life. So these businesses are still very attractive. And therefore, you know, we are also not very discriminatory. And ultimately, the blend of all these products is what will make our overall business margin. On the GDS specialty side, if you see molecules like salmeterol, paliperidone, even some of the newer molecules like apixaban and all, as it stands now, I think their margins are actually fairly attractive. And these are perhaps not a typical representation of a GDS molecule out there in the GDS universe. So therefore, you might see that Newland's GDS portfolio on the specialty side is tends to have better margins. And the CMS portfolio is actually a reflection of the handful of molecules that we have. And as this pipeline grows, the margin profile of the business might change as well.
Got it. Thanks for that. Very clear.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that management is able to address questions from all participants in the conference, please limit your question to 2 questions per participant. Should you have a follow-up question, we request you to rejoin the queue. And the next question is from the line of Pawan Kumar Roy, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Am I audible?
Yes, audible.
Congratulations to the management for the excellent results. I have got 2 questions which are related with each other. First is the question related to your exports. You have reflected that 76% value coming from international operations. But the map shows that only 1% revenue comes from India. So there is a mismatch which I have not been able to connect. Secondly, now since most of your operations are or products are being exported, what is the situation just facing in Red Sea or the Suez Canal area. Is it affecting our logistic lines? That is my question.
Yeah. In terms of the export being at 76%, it corresponds to the direct exports to customers who are and to sites abroad. Whereas the world map, the is where you see the 1% per India is in terms of the end market. So our customers could be in India, but the consumption would their end market would be elsewhere. So that's why you would find that there's a difference. So exports are 76% in terms of direct exports, but our customers mostly sell in the regulated market. So that is where there is a difference. And at this point of time, we haven't seen any impact from the events around the Red Sea.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, please limit your questions to one question per participant. Should you have a follow-up question, we request you to rejoin the queue. The next question is from the line of Dhaval from Infinity. Please go ahead.
Good evening. Congratulations on a fantastic set. My question is about the peptides business. How far are we away from generating substantial revenue to our business mix from the peptides division?
Yeah, thanks for the question. I think for the peptide business, we have two molecules in CNS which are perhaps one step away from commercialization. But in both these cases, we are second suppliers, so we really don't have a handle on the timelines. It could take, you know, maybe 2 years or maybe even longer, depending on how the client decides to move forward because they already have a primary source. On the GDS side, we have about three molecules that we are working on right now for which the milestone would be for us to file a DMF. We expect to file one this calendar year and maybe two in 2026. In terms of potential, the GDS molecules also have very high potential. In fact, they have higher potential than the CMS molecules. But in our forecasts or in our plans, we have not really quantified any of these into our projections because until we see some short-term commercial visibility, we don't feel comfortable. So I think short answer is that yes, we do have several projects in peptides, even ones which are maybe closer to commercialization, but we don't still have a handle on timelines or quantity of commercialization.
So whatever business we generate from peptides in future will be an upside to the projections you've given.
Yeah, we've not given any projections, so.
Yeah, just an idea that you've given, a picture.
Yeah, yeah. The outlook we've given does not factor in heavy inflow from peptides.
Great, great, great. Congratulations once again.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Eldon, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Firstly, congratulations on completing 40 fantastic years. So my first question, my question was actually regarding this joint development initiative we had with one of the developers. So I just wanted to understand what is the status and when can we expect the revenue to accrue to us?
Your question is about the real estate piece, right?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, so I think the building is completed. The developer has completed the construction of the building. And in fact, we have requested them to provide an exit for us. And in fact, we hope that it will happen this calendar year, depending on how the markets transpire. But if that goes through, maybe it should be around 100 crore kind of inflow. But we don't have a clear timeline on it yet. I think just with everything going on this year in the country and the real estate markets and all, till we get to a closer point of seeing some inflows, we don't want to be too confident about the timelines, but we expect it will happen this year.
Understood. Fair enough.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Jayesh, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello. Am I audible?
Yes, you're audible, sir.
Thanks for the opportunity. And congratulations for excellent set of numbers. I have two questions. First is, does the management think that our business and volume mix has scaled up to a level where we can assure that our EBITDA margins will remain north of 20%, at least in the foreseeable future or otherwise? And I have another question, that is, our asset turn right now is approximately 3.1, that is given in this slide. Do we see further increase in the same over the period of, let's say, 2 to 3 years? Thank you.
Can you repeat the first question?
Do you think, does the management think that our business and volume mix has scaled up to a level where we can assure that our EBITDA margin will not fluctuate a lot and remain above 20% in the foreseeable future or otherwise?
See, I think assurance is a very strong word, so I wouldn't go anywhere near that. I think I would probably just kind of, you know, circle back to the commentary that Suchet and I made. I think we have a good visibility of our future, and we indicated what that visibility is like. But I think our business is governed by a lot of risks and uncertainties. So it would not be wise for us to provide any assurances. I think if you see the margins and the way the margins are scaling up, and if you see the size of the business and how it is scaling up, I think, you know, we would leave it to you to make you know, reasonable conclusions about the business. I think I would also just remind that in our previous commentary also, we said that, you know, we're not seeing this growth coming on the back of one-time businesses. You know, these are all part of our ongoing business. So ultimately, we leave it to your wisdom to, you know, deduce the stability of the future and the likely margins.
Yeah.
On your second question on asset turns, you know, we are at around 3.1. We believe that that's we have kind of optimized it, and we would be in that range. In some years, we would come down, and in some years, we would go up. And so that's our view that, you know, we have kind of our optimum capital turns is that broad range of 3±.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks. I got the answer.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nitin Agarwal, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Just wanted to know about the CapEx plans to grow the business further over the next couple of years. What kind of CapEx can we expect and expected asset turn from that, if any?
It's on now. Go ahead.
Broadly, I think so. I would like to be consistent with what we have said earlier. A normal CapEx would be around in the range of 100 crores. As we have informed the stock exchange in November this year, we have started building the next block, which we have given a figure of around 128 crores. Moving forward, based on business opportunities, like the one that happened recently where we were able to acquire a piece of land, which was adjoining our unit 1, 5 acres, we kind of went ahead and are in the process of acquiring it. So I would say that broadly, take the normal capex of 100, and as we have built up cash, we should spend in the broad range of 100 to 120 crores in the next couple of years.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mehul from 40 Cents. Please go ahead.
Thank you, sir, for the opportunity.
Pardon me, I am new to our company. So I have some very basic questions like what does DMS stand for, what does DMS stand for, what does GDS stand for? And also if you can elaborate a bit on the context behind GDS and DMS. Hello?
Just give me a short answer.
Yes. So you wanted to know what the GDS stands for, CMS stands for, and what else? I'm sorry?
DMS. You said some DMS been filed. DMS has been filed.
Okay. So if you're saying DMS, it stands for Drug Master File. GDS means it's generic drug substances, which is nothing but APIs we make for the generic space. And CMS is nothing but, as a CDMO, the molecules that we make for innovative companies.
Okay, so the CMS business is all about the CDMO area, right?
Correct.
Yeah, CDMO business in Newland is called as CMS, and the generics business is what we call as GDS.
All right, generics is GDS, okay. And how is the revenue split share between the two?
Mehul, our investor presentation covers all the information. I think you can just
go. Yeah, perhaps if you could just maybe go over the presentation. I think even we've given a little bit of an overview of the segments. And then maybe you can circle back to our IR team and then maybe we can elaborate a little bit more.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was the last question for today. I would now hand the conference over to management for closing comments.
Okay, we would like to thank you all for taking time to attend the call and asking questions about the business and your interest in the company. In case you have any further questions, we'd like you to reach out to Ravi. Once again, and we would be happy to answer them. Once again, thanks for joining the call and a good evening.
Thank you. On behalf of Newland Laboratories, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.